Welcome to the Renewables Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams in the renewable sector. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent across the continuum from concept through commercialization and beyond in areas like energy storage, electric vehicles, hydrogen, solar, wind, and more. Here's your co-hosts, Mitch Robbins and Adam Soppy.
Hello, everybody. We're back with the Renewables Talent Lab and very excited to welcome M. Douglas Dagon. And I'll jump into Doug's bio here. And please elaborate on that because there's so much there. There's so much to cover, too. So I'll jump right into it. M. Douglas is the Vice President of Strategic Initiatives and Renewable Energy at Suburban Propane. He's responsible for leading the company's long-term strategic growth as well as renewable energy diversification initiatives. And that's, you know, I think from what you had shared through usually the identification, analysis, and execution of formative acquisitions, strategic partnerships, investments in the RE opportunities in the community as well. You joined the organization after spending nearly two decades advising public and private entities on all things renewable, all aspects of renewable energy projects, advocating for environmental and energy policies, supporting climate change initiatives. I'll have to take a breath and then go back in. You're serving on several boards and industry groups, including the Board of Directors of Low Carbon Fuel Coalition, Board of Directors for the Advanced Biofuels Association, Executive Committee of the International DME Association, you know, a couple others that you may want to highlight, bachelor's degree in chemistry and environmental studies from Middlebury College, double master's prepared, including a master's degree in environmental management from Yale University, JD, Vermont Law School. You live in New Jersey with your wife, and your free time you enjoy skiing, going to the theater, traveling. Holy cow, is there anything I'm missing?
Adam, thank you so much for having me. It's great. Appreciate the kind intro. You know, I've been fortunate in life to do some interesting things and have them all line up with renewable energy, which is really where my passion lies. And it goes back to my undergrad experience in addressing climate change and understanding that the root problems of climate change really are problems of chemistry and physics. And if you don't really understand that scientific underpinning, coming up with effective solutions is challenging. You know, after working in that space for a while, I realized that, you know, I was never going to make a scientific breakthrough and get a Nobel Prize in science and fix the world's problems. But I did have a strong enough understanding of the science that I felt like if I could grasp the policy and legal and, you know, regulatory challenges, maybe I could bridge that divide and really make a connection between policymakers and scientists and understanding how influential law is at moving those things forward. That's what drove me to go on to that, you know, advanced education. And I had probably 5 or 6 years between undergrad and going back to grad school. And in that time, I really established sort of where I wanted my role to be. And that was doing whatever I could to make my time during the day and my working, you know, life contribute to benefiting the planet and improving our energy and improving our climate situation. So I've been fortunate to do that along my career and really have some great opportunities from negotiating it for small island nations at several of the COPs to advocating for, you know, several of the environmental nonprofits before state and federal agencies. All of that really grounded me in understanding the real complexity of renewable energy. There is no silver bullet. There's not even any silver buckshot. It's got to be an all of the above kind of solution. And when the opportunity came to join Suburban Propane and lead our efforts into renewable energy, I jumped at it. And I've had a tremendous ability to bring renewable energy to customers. For a long time, I've really believed that, you know, businesses have to play a role in the energy transition. Existing energy companies have to play a role in the energy transition. You know, we're a society of complexity, but we live in a social media world of sound bites, and those two things don't work real well. You know, there's some that say, you know, electrify everything and do it now. But the reality is that's a lot more challenging than, you know, the sound bite would have it be. And so the energy transition is more complex. And companies like Suburban Propane and others that are existing energy companies really have to have an active role in that energy transition.
That's amazing. Thank you for getting us up to speed here and kind of the origin story and then how we are today. And what a legacy, you know, to be able to, one, work on probably arguably the most complex, you know, challenge of our history. And then also one that not only is, hey, we want to lay it on the moon or we want to do something cool. Well, probably if we don't get this right in the next 60 or 70 years, nothing else is going to matter. We're going to be in big trouble. So it's something we have to come together on. And I appreciate your outlook, you know, acknowledging that businesses have to be a part of this. And I know, was it yesterday or the day before, or the night before, I was reading, you know, one of the large CEOs of a large oil company kind of mentioned that, like, hey, what people are talking about is we have the solutions, but some of them are too expensive for the consumer that the consumer is not willing to pay for that. And I know he's getting a ton of pushback for that because they're saying, hey, well, you have an influence as your role. Yes. But I also don't disagree with him that, hey, we need to figure this out collectively. And like you said, there is no, you know, magic bullet. If it's hydrogen and solar and wind, and it's usually and not either or. So yeah, I love that you have a unique ability to liaise between all those worlds with policy and regulatory and the chemistry, or excuse me, and the scientific background too. So that's amazing. I know it's a loaded question, but what are your, you know, what is your outlook? I know 2050 obviously is a huge milestone for us. Where do you see things? Where are we today? Are we ahead or behind? What could we have done differently? Or maybe more importantly, what can we do now for the next decade or two to get where we need to be as a society, as a planet?
That really is the fundamental question that I think the world is struggling with. You know, it's hard to say if we're ahead or behind. I mean, in reality, we're probably always going to be behind, you know, just given the size of the problem, the fact that it's, you know, not confined to one country or one state or one municipality. It's really a global problem. And so it needs a global solution. And while, you know, the United States and other large industrial nations have an outsized ability to, you know, drive the solutions, they're not going to be alone. And you're absolutely right. It really is an all of the above strategy that's going to require us to make grounds on multiple fronts. And ultimately, the solutions that we end up with have to be solutions that make economic sense for nations, for states, for governments, but also for the individual customer and consumer. I mean, if it's too costly for me as a normal citizen to make the decision that are best for the planet, I'm not going to be able to make those decisions. I mean, most people on this planet don't have the luxury of spending a premium amount of money to mitigate their climate footprint. So we have to have solutions that are, you know, affordable. And those are going to be solutions that are driven by government incentives, by government investment, and by businesses that are you know, seeing the long-term perspective and taking the long-term view. One of the things that excited me about Suburban was the fact that it's been around for 95 years. And as a company,
wow,
we want to be around for the next 95 years. And at some point in our evolution, we're going to sell more renewable energy than traditional. When is that going to come? I don't know. I mean, there's a sense of urgency and we are moving with all due haste, but that also has to be true for every other company. Every other energy company out there has got to be involved in the energy transition. And at some point in their future, they're going to need to sell more renewable energy than traditional. And I think those energy sources are going to be broad. I mean, hydrogen's absolutely going to play a role. The amount of government incentives that are flowing to the hydrogen space, in order to drive development there is something that our nation has, you know, probably never seen before in terms of government money coming to develop a new space, because the hydrogen economy of tomorrow is going to be so different from the hydrogen economy of today. So, you know, I think that we probably are behind where we need to be, but I'm optimistic about the future. I think that a lot of, you know, there seems to be a swell of awareness of the problem. It seems like 10 years ago, we were still debating whether climate change was happening. I don't really see that debate happening anymore. I think that the evidence is in, and, you know, regardless of what side of the political spectrum you sit on, I think people recognize that climate change is happening and that we have to do something to address it, and that we need to do something sooner rather than later. That being said, it's going to take time for these technologies to develop. It's going to take time for society and, you know, for governments to figure out exactly what niche is going to be filled. I mean, it makes sense to use electric vehicles in many applications. City living, you know, autonomous driving and electric vehicles makes a lot of sense. But heavy duty transportation, where you're trucking a lot of stuff from one side of the country to the other, or moving thousands of tons of equipment across an ocean, you know, we need denser fuels than batteries. And those fuels are going to be, you know, liquid and gaseous fuels. And they need to start coming from renewables. And then in the long run, they need to be all renewables. But getting there is going to take time. Figuring out what application is going to be best is going to take time and efforts. And the role that, you know, four companies have in making that happen, I think is really important. And the role that governments have in incentivizing those developments and really providing the policy and economic, you know, drivers to allow those new expensive upfront capital intensive technologies develop is going to be important.
Yeah. Gosh, there's so much to unravel there. And yeah, I mean, you know, my wife and I, our family, we're looking at, you know, possibly electrifying our home as best as we can, too. And then you look at, OK, now you need to go to a 220 volt. Well, that's $3,000 to $30,000. Now you look at appliances. It's, you know, generally we're all like, when it dies, electrify. But to get ahead or proactive on certain things, I mean, the upfront cost is huge in some cases. You know, heat pumps and stuff, and certain things there. And it is interesting to see. You know, we're looking at incentives as well. Obviously, it's an election year. Nikki Haley just dropped out right as we're recording this, so it's going to be a showdown of what we've had. And the IRA may be on the chopping block. It may look different in 18 months from now or 30 months from now. And so some of those government that funding and the incentives may change, and that changes the math, unfortunately, for individual consumers like myself and nations and municipalities. And then, you know, talk about eminent domain, and there's so many complexities of hydrogen. Hey, do you want something in your backyard? Do you want a solar farm? And so there's decisions we're going to have to make, and sacrifices ultimately that we're all going to have to make. So yeah, I'm really glad to hear though that you're optimistic. That's awesome. As somebody in the know, that knows where we're at today and then hopefully how to get there in the future. Let's talk about Suburban. You know, it sounds like you're excited. I didn't know. I knew as you guys have been around for a while. So almost 100 years, 95 years. That's amazing. And then to say, hey, we want to be here for another 95 years. We recognize we can see around the corner. We know what's coming, and we want to pivot and then have that transition to more renewable than traditional. What's going on there? How are you going to make that happen?
Yeah, so it this is actually our 96th year this year. So we are quickly approaching that 100th anniversary and looking forward to it. And, you know, about 5 years ago, the company really started to think about how are we going to preserve the company for the future? I mean, there are not many companies that have been around as long as Suburban Propane. And we service, you know, over a million customers from coast to coast. And we want to continue to provide energy to those customers. But what kind of energy is that going to be in the next 5, 10, 15, 50 years? And really, it's going to be increasingly renewable. And so for us, the renewable, you know, platform really has three core pieces, and they're all interconnected. And the first piece is very simple, renewable propane and a molecule called renewable DME. DME is very similar to propane. It can be blended with propane. And when you make DME from renewable sources that are extremely carbon negative, like biogas, you can blend down traditional propane to approaching a net zero mark. And so that's a drop-in replacement. Everyone who has propane infrastructure today can just use that. And so that's a no-brainer. We're working to bring, you know, more renewable DME online. We're working to bring more renewable propane online and bring more of that to our customers. And we're excited that in the upcoming year, we're going to have significantly more renewable propane available than we've had at any point in the past. And so that's sort of bucket one. Bucket two is biogas from anaerobic digestion. And so when you take food waste or agricultural waste or dairy manure or chicken waste and you digest it in an anaerobic digester, you produce a methane-rich renewable natural gas and biogas, and you can do a lot of things with that. So you can actually use that raw biogas to make renewable DME or make renewable propane. You can use that raw biogas to upgrade it to RNG. You can strip out the carbon dioxide and use the carbon dioxide as renewable carbon dioxide in food and beverage applications, and you can take the product and you can make hydrogen, which is the third bucket for us, hydrogen. You could also use renewable propane and low carbon intensity propane blends to move hydrogen. They're great hydrogen carriers. And up until now, our nation's hydrogen infrastructure has been one of massive projects that liquefy large amounts of hydrogen, move it in bulk, and break it down. And the applications are, you know, fertilizer manufacturing, industrial, you know, large applications. But to really decarbonize heavy shipping and industry, we're going to need localized hydrogen availability. And moving hydrogen is hard. It's a really small molecule. You have to pressurize it, or you have to liquefy it. And if you liquefy it, it takes a lot of energy and has a pretty significant carbon footprint. So if you want to move it as a gas, you still have to pressure it. But you can move a blend of low carbon intensity propane to an on-site reformer and make hydrogen on site on demand. So you have a small hydrogen storage tank at a refueling station or at a, you know, a distribution center for one of the big box retailers. They use lots of forklifts. And when it's needed, that propane, the low carbon intensity propane or zero carbon intensity propane, is taken out and reformed on site to make hydrogen. And then that hydrogen fuels fuel cells that run everything from forklifts to, you know, class A tractor trailer trucks that are moving large amounts of goods around the country. So those three areas are where we are focusing, and it's what we're going to bring, how we're going to bring value to our customers. They leverage our experience and core competencies, but they're not the only solutions. I mean, we need people who are doing large scale wind and solar and bringing renewable electricity to the grid. We need all of it. And it really is, you know, about all of the above, immediately, everywhere, all the time. I mean, that's sort of the critical piece to addressing the climate problem.
Gosh, that's exciting. So I live in Colorado, so I'm grilling out and we're making burgers or whatever, and then the propane, my propane runs out. I'm running to the store, King Supers or whatever, the grocery store. When do you see that where I can grab some of these drop-ins and then run home and plug it in and I'm good to go?
Yeah, so I think probably, so propane is a kind of misunderstood industry and molecule. So there are, most people, when they think about propane, they think about their barbecue grill and the small 20-pound cylinders. It's going to be a long time before that decarbonizes. There may, and the reason being is that majority of propane usage is actually for home heating, residential, commercial heating and cooking. And it's used in places where natural gas isn't available. And so those tend to be, you know, more rural places, more, you know, lessly densely populated places. So renewable propane is going to be, is available today. Propane blended with RDME is available today. We're the only company that's selling a propane plus renewable DME blend. We're selling it in California, and we're selling it to our forklift customers in California. And that's because there are limited quantities of the RDME available, so we couldn't bring it everywhere. We wanted to do engine testing and analysis and make sure that it was a true drop-in replacement fuel. So we're doing that. And the incentives in California for the low carbon fuel, you know, program make it financially viable for us to do that. But we are, you know, partnering with companies that are exploring bringing large scale renewable DME plants online. And we are purchasing, you know, several million more gallons of renewable propane in this upcoming year than we ever have in the past. And so that'll be available to mostly, again, forklift or fleet vehicle customers, again, because of the incentives that make the ability to purchase that higher, you know, cost product. But again, economies of scale, I mean, as those incentives, you know, fade away, hopefully enough investment is driven to the space that the renewable propane and renewable DME blends are more readily available and cost effective to customers. Eventually, someday, all of the propane that everyone sells and uses should be renewable or propane blended with DME in a low carbon intensity propane product.
That's exciting. I grew up on a farm in Iowa, so a very remote area. And it's good to hear that, because I think a lot of folks like us growing up, we wanted to do more. And one, you know, it's got to make sense financially, but also like utilities, I think our options were and still maybe are limited for a lot of folks. And utilities, you know, the incentivization on that could be a whole topic perhaps, you know, as well. Like, hey, we have not only clean energy, but it's cheaper energy. We can sell it. You know, we can get that. If you give us interconnectedness into the grid, we can get that out. And, you know, and I understand the, you know, the logic. If they're incentivized to sell more expensive energy, then that's, you know, that I understand that. So maybe some scenario in the future, I don't know how to solve that problem, but, you know, I think maybe that would have to help too. And we're just seeing, you know, like you said, the bios, this is exciting. SAF, you know, like Richard Branson just flew across the, you know, across the ocean on a full set, you know, SAF. And we're doing some really cool stuff there with biodiesels and, you know, and blends too. So this is awesome. I'm really, thank you. I'm grateful that you're educating me on this. One thing, you and I had talked about this on offline a little bit, is I talk with a lot, as a recruiter, I talk with a lot of people every day, and some are from different areas, some highly regulated industries like you and I talked about, maybe med tech, maybe aerospace or automotive or wherever it is. These are sharp people that they're going through, you know, ISO standards and highly regulated areas, and they're passionate like you are and I am about this space. Is there an easy, air quotes, easy pivot into working working with a company like Suburban or working with some other organizations, or what could somebody do to kind of get ahead of it? Schooling, accreditations, experience that could potentially be tangential enough to make that transition. Is there any advice you'd give to somebody out there?
Yeah, so great question. I mean, as you know, the hardest part of any business is human capital. I mean, getting the right people, retaining the right people, attracting the right people, it is such a challenge. You know, there are some skills that are transferable from industry to industry, technical skills, engineering skills, and the demand for those. I mean, we're seeing it right now with some of our biogas projects. The demand for engineering talent and expertise is so high, and there's limited availability out there. All of the, you know, the one thing that does tie all renewable projects, whether they're wind or offshore or solar or battery storage, any of those, they all require significant amounts of engineering. So that's not something with it that we're, you know, not plagued with as well. I mean, we face engineering challenges for building RNG plants, hydrogen plants, renewable propane plants. All of that takes engineering. So to the extent that someone has that background or wants to go into the renewable space, I mean, an engineering degree, whether chemical, process, mechanical, electrical, all of those skills are in high demand. So that's an easy pivot or career path. You know, and then there are others too. I mean, we need people to sell these products. And so when it comes to renewable natural gas, that sale is kind of specific. I don't think that just a widget salesperson can just pivot to selling renewable natural gas, but someone who's been in the natural gas space and worked on dispatching, you know, large amounts of natural gas can definitely make that pivot. You know, we just hired for a commercial role in that role, and we looked at several people that came out of regulated utilities selling and moving and dispatching regular natural gas to fill our renewable needs. So that's definitely one. And then, you know, when it comes to sort of vision and leadership, I mean, those skills are absolutely transferable. And someone who has built a successful company or helped to scale a company, and the one thing about renewables, whether it's as a division of an established company like Suburban Propane or whether it's a new startup, they're all scaling. They're all scaling fast. I mean, even the renewable divisions of you know, some of the large major energy companies like ExxonMobil. So those skills are directly transferable as well. And there are a lot of opportunities in the renewable energy space right now.
It's a double-edged sword because it's exciting, but also engineering. I feel like we're going backwards as a country. The STEM schools are producing kids that are doing well in science and math. And then at some point, between then and now, they get off course, especially females, which really bothers me as somebody that has two nieces and, you know, and I want to encourage that. We need to get those numbers up big time. And then we look at like H-1B work visas for, I say kids, because I'm an old guy now, but people from India or China or wherever, where these sharp engineers are, how do we get them into our companies, retain them, and then, you know, provide resources for them as well too. So, well, that's good to hear. So if somebody has that engineering mindset and background and training, it sounds like there is maybe a path forward for them to get into renewables, even if they're out of college in a different sector. Okay. Awesome. Gosh, this has been so much, and I'd love to have you back maybe in the future. There's so much more to cover, but I want to be mindful of your time as well. Anything else, anything that's top of mind you for Suburban, for renewable in as a whole, yourself personally or professionally, anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, well, first, thank you for having me. I'd love to come back at some point in the future. I think the takeaway message that I would leave people with is just that, you know, while it is daunting, the impact of climate, we're seeing it with severe weather across the country, and the impact that has on people's lives is really tragic. But there are opportunities, and you know, there is there's a lot of work happening in the renewable space, and I think that as a country, we're beginning to understand that we need multiple paths to reducing, you know, greenhouse gases, and there are a lot of people working on that now, and I'm optimistic the future will have it will be a renewable energy future. The energy transition will be successful ultimately, and I think we will avoid the most impactful challenges of climate change in the long run. So I'm optimistic about that.
Any ideas on a timeline? I mean, because I don't like when people say we have 6 years or we're in doomsday. That's, I don't think, the right message. Even if that is accurate, then people just go, fine, I'm going to live it up and it's too late now, versus, hey, within 200 years, if we don't figure this out, we're going to be in trouble. So I think it's, you know, it's probably sooner, more imminent than not. But well, I get, maybe I'll ask, that's a loaded question. If you want to tackle it, great. But what are two or three things I can do you know, at a consumer level. And if that's telling my city council something or a school board to try change something from an energy perspective for our schools or our communities, or, you know, lobbying or electrifying certain things or driving an EV or a plug-in hybrid, or where can we make the biggest impact?
Yeah, I think, you know, each of us has an impact, and to the extent that we make purchasing decisions that are in line with climate reduction is great. I mean, some of the things that I've done in my own life is really address food waste. I mean, the problem of food waste is huge. And so making sure that I'm not, you know, buying a ton of vegetables that go bad in my fridge, and that my wife and I are on top of what we're eating, what we have, and what's available. Also, you know, addressing how much we drive. We both have hybrids. We have solar panels on our home. Our electric grid in New Jersey isn't as clean as some others. And so the benefits of an electric vehicle in New Jersey aren't as great as they are in some other states that have a cleaner grid. But we make the electrons on our roof and drive plug-in hybrids and get the benefit of those. But just not taking unnecessary trips, not spending time, combining errands into one trip and being cognizant. And then the other purchasing decisions we make, everything from our clothes to, you know, the pens and pencils we use. I mean, all of those have climate impact. And so looking for things that last and really reusing, repurposing things that we already have, those are the things personally that I think each of us can do to address our own impact. And as a nation, I mean, making decisions that really promote the increased availability and affordability of renewable energy are going to be critical.
That's great. I appreciate that. Yeah, the food waste we've looked at, like composting and certain things, and that is a big deal for many different reasons, and all the water that it takes to grow that food, and then throwing it, you know, in the trash, and that doesn't feel good. My wife and I are trying to, you know, we're only 6 days into the new month, but we're not trying to buy anything new in March, and outside of like foods, you know, things with a shelf life. And it's weird. The Amazon guy hasn't been here, and we're going to thrift shops and, you know, and recycle, you know, and repurposing things. And it's going to be a challenging year, I have a feeling, or month, I mean, but really eye-opening, like how much stuff we bring in into the carbon footprint that we don't need to. It's garbage and we end up throwing it away, and kids get toys for, you know, holidays and birthdays and stuff, and then it ends up, you know, getting thrown away and it's hard plastic or whatever else. So yeah, it's really eye-opening. On I'm optimistic, I think, for the future from the generations below, you know, the millennials, Gen Z, etc. I think they're squared away. I really do, especially from an environmental standpoint. So I'm really optimistic there, but the rest of us need to get on board and do what we can to make an impact. So gosh, I think that might be a good, you know, wrapping up point, at least for session one. If there's anything else you'd like to add, if there's our links to certain organizations or, you know, anything else you would like to share, we'll get those into the show notes. But other than that, I'll let you get back to your day. And thank you so much. I think the audience is going to find so much value. I certainly have. I'll show you my notes here, a full page and a half as I'm frantically writing down notes. And I think your wisdom's great. And thank you for sharing it with us. Thank you for paying it forward. And really everything you're doing personally and professionally to help, you know, literally save the world. So I appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam. It's been great talking with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the Renewables Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.